I think for us as a church, I think that this past season, I would describe it as a season of summer. Not that everything is perfect, not that there haven't been problems, but that by and large, God has been doing something absolutely incredible and amazing here. And it has been such a joy to watch. And as a pastor here, I look at what God is doing in our church and in people's lives, and I'm like, I had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that, and I had nothing to do with that. And it feels like walking in the summer and you just see fruit everywhere that you had nothing to do with. And so I think that this has been a season of summer. It's exciting to see what God is doing, and I'm excited about what he's going to do. But just like the year, the summer of the soul doesn't last forever. And you hear that, and you might be like, whoa, John, don't say that. And what is it about saying that? What makes us cringe? And I think it's because we equate summer with God's favor. And we worry that when summer ends, is God's favor gone? See, I've had to learn three lessons. One, there are seasons. Two, figuring out what season I'm in. And three, seeing that God is present in every season. That's been part of my journey. And I've noticed that I've been growing in it because a while ago I hit a season that wasn't my favorite season. And one of the thoughts that came to my mind, I'm like, oh, I wonder what God's going to do here. I'm not perfect at it, but that's been a growth point for me. I'm like, okay, well, what is God going to do here? And one of the most powerful lessons for me came in a hospital visit. This was a number of years ago at a different church, but there was this couple, and they had gone through a lot of difficult stuff, and they were experiencing a health challenge, and so they were in the hospital. So I went to visit them, and normally when I do a hospital visit, I'll sit in the car in the parking lot, and I'll open my Bible and say, God, what would you want me to share with them? And I felt like God gave me a psalm, and when I opened up my Bible to read it, it wasn't one of the good ones. Like, it wasn't a happy one. I don't remember what it was, but I think it was maybe Psalm 77, which says, will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? I'm like, no, I'm not reading that. I'm going to the hospital. These people are having a tough time. I'm not going to go bring sad words to them. And so I'm like, thank you, God, but I'm going to go to one of the happy ones. And I don't remember which one I chose, but I chose a different one. I went into the room, sat with them, and I said, how are you doing? And they shared, and I said, okay, well, I just want to read a verse for you. And I don't remember what it was, but I think it was Psalm 89, which starts, I will sing of the Lord's great love forever. With my mouth I will make your faithfulness known through all generations. And this couple was very gracious, and they listened to me, and they said, thank you, John, but that's not where we're at right now. And I went, oh. Well, I have another one. And then I shared with them this other verse. And they listened and they said, yes, that's where we're at. Thank you. And for me, it was they were so gracious, but it was such a transforming moment for me. Because I come into the hospital, I'm like, why wouldn't you want to hear that God is good and life is good and things are good and I'm glad it's good? Like, why wouldn't you want to hear that? And for them, they were in a place where they were like, no, things aren't good right now. And we're okay to say that. And we're okay to talk to God about that. And so for me, that was such a shift that summer and isn't just the only time where we experience God's favor, but in every season we go through that God's faithfulness is there. Have you ever experienced that moment, that summer of the soul? When things are good and fruit comes easy and stuff is happening and you're like, I didn't do anything, but here it is and it's wonderful and it's beautiful. I hope you have. I hope you've recognized it when it's come. But have you also had a winter where everything seems dead and whatever you put in the ground doesn't come up and it's cold? And it's miserable, and you wonder, is it going to be this way forever? See, how many people have had the winter and you've experienced God's faithfulness? Just lift your hand. How many people have had winter and experienced God's faithfulness? A lot of people. And maybe you're here this morning and you never have. And what you need to see is the hands lifted here of people saying that I have been through winter. and I have seen God's faithfulness. That God is faithful in every season of the soul. So over the next few weeks through June, we're looking through different psalms as windows into different seasons of the soul. We're going to look at the ones where it's easy to see God's goodness and ones where it's more difficult. So if you want to open your Bibles, we're going to look at Psalm chapter 1. Though it won't be up on the screen, so if you've got the app, if you've got the Pew Bible, it's page 249. But as you turn there, just a little bit of context. The book of Psalms, the word psalm just means song or poem. And so the book of Psalms was kind of the Spotify for the nation of Israel. It was compiled over hundreds of years, is written by different people at different times for different reasons and in different seasons. And often when you read a psalm, it'll say the number and then there will be some italics and it might tell you a little bit about who wrote it or why they wrote it or how the song is used. And so if your day list that day was feeling surrounded by enemies, you might pull out Psalm 69 or 70. If you're feeling overwhelmed, you might go to Psalm 55. Psalm 120 through Psalm 134 were literally road trip psalms. They were the psalms of ascent that people would sing as they went up to the temple in Jerusalem. So there's a psalm for different reasons and seasons. It was Israel's songbook. But it's interesting with Spotify how playlists have replaced albums. But sometimes the order of a song on an album matters. And so here on Psalm 1, where we're looking, there's no little heading saying who wrote it or why it is. Psalm 1 is kind of like the inside flap on a book or an overture in a musical. It gives us a taste of what's to come. So this is Psalm chapter 1. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. This is the word of the Lord. So God, we just ask that you would open your word to us, that you would soften our hearts, that we would hear what you're saying, and that you'd give us the faith to respond. Amen. So we're going to unpack this a little bit, and one of the things I think we have to be careful of is this psalm is really, really clear, but I don't think it's simple. It's really clear, but I don't think it's simple. You'll notice the first part is about two things. The people you can hang around with, the wicked, the sinners, and the mockers. And there's also momentum. It talks about walking, standing, and sitting. And so if you would imagine a journey, as it were, of walking along, and it describes different kinds of people that are like a whirlpool that can kind of pull you off course and suck you in and bring you right down. And so blessed is the one who just keeps walking and doesn't get pulled into this whirlpool, as it were. A few years ago, we were going to Vancouver to have supper with friends. So we knew the restaurant we were going to. We parked, and as we were walking on our way to the restaurant, someone came up to us and offered a variety of substances. And there was this invitation that we were walking to the restaurant, but there was this opportunity for me to turn and to walk with this fellow, and then to stand as he gets his supply, and then to sit and partake. And see, it's a change in direction, it's a change of momentum that someone can come in and kind of, like a whirlpool, just pull us off course. Now, we didn't go with them. We went to the restaurant, and we had frog's legs for supper, which I think was the right choice in the end. It was good. But blessed are those who don't walk with the wicked, who don't stand with the sinners, who don't sit with the mockers, but they just keep going. And it's not just avoiding that, but blessed are those who delight in God's law. Now, I have to be honest, this phrase here, whose delight is in the law of the Lord, how many people get really excited by that phrase? Man, the law of the Lord pumps you up in the morning. You're like, oh, it's Monday. I'm just barely pulling through. And you're like, I need law of the Lord. I find it not the most exhilarating idea, but if I take law of the Lord, and at the heart of it, it's God's intention for the way life is to be lived. God's intention for how we live our life. I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. That God gives us a way that life is meant to be lived, and so law of the Lord, not super engaging, very true, very good, but life the way that God meant it to be lived. We've been talking about a rule of life over the past couple of weeks, especially in our life groups. And it's this idea that a plant can use a trellis, the wooden structure, and the plant grows up, it's more healthy, it's more secure, it bears more fruit. And that God gives us a trellis for our lives. It can be a structure, not to burden us, but to give us stability, to bring us health, to help us bear more fruit. And it's not just knowing about this, but delighting. This joyful excitement. It's like the idea of fitting a puzzle piece in the right place, or the perfect song at just the right moment, or stepping outside, and it's like, wow, this is my favorite temperature. It's just like, oh, you're just excited about the rightness of what God has to say about our lives. And meditates, sometimes we think about someone sitting cross-legged alone in a dark room, just silently. It's very mental. But in Hebrew, the word meditate, it has a verbal aspect. It's almost like a muttering or a murmuring. Have you ever seen someone that has a song stuck in their head and they're like, and they're, it's like, well, okay, something's going on in your head, and all of a sudden it's, sweet Caroline. And what's going on in my head, it's kind of moving through me, and every once in a while it comes out my mouth. And meditate has that kind of aspect that it's not just sitting in your head, but it's kind of flowing through your life, and every once in a while you're like, blessed is the one who doesn't walk with the wicked. And it's like, oh, okay. It's filling up my life and coming out my mouth. It overflows. So this joyful excitement about the way that God has for us to live, and it overflows and comes out, not just mentally, but in what we say as well. People like that are like a fruit tree. I saw yesterday that a local berry farm had a frost this week. And they lost 40% of their strawberries. That's rough. A couple of years ago, when the summer was really, really hot, I know the raspberry crop was just decimated. They were hard to find, and if you found them, they weren't that good. But good fruit needs a good season. If it's too hot or too cold, or too much rain or not enough rain, or if there's bugs or whatever else it is, good fruit needs a good season. But it's interesting here that the kind of fruit tree that is described is one that isn't dependent on the season or the weather or anything else going on, but there is a consistency. Because the tree isn't looking at what's going on out here. The tree is rooted by streams of water, and it can make it through. The leaves are always green, and it always bears fruit. It's not like a strawberry crop or a raspberry crop or any other fruit that can fail. This kind of tree always produces fruit. Not every season, but in season, it bears fruit. But verse 4, not so the wicked. Kind of takes everything else and says, none of this is true about the wicked. They are like chaff. Are spits still a thing? The sunflower seeds? I feel like they were way more popular when I was a kid, but maybe they're still out there. But, you know, you'd sit in the folding lawn chair outside, and you'd have a cup, and you'd throw a whole bunch in your mouth, and it was super salty, and then you'd crunch, and you'd eat the seed, and then spit out the spits, and then you pick up your chair, and you can tell exactly where everyone's been sitting, because it's just this pile of sunflower seeds. That is chaff. Nobody picks those up on the way out. You're like, oh, pardon me, I'm just going to gather these up. No, you leave them there. And when you're threshing grain, you kind of work it through and you throw it up in the air, and the grain is heavy and it falls down, but as the chaff, the part around the grain, falls off, the wind blows it away. And so farmers, they might plow it back into the ground as fertilizer, they might feed it to animals, but humans can't eat it. So some people even just burn it. It's not really good for anything. And we're not saying that the wicked are worthless, but they don't produce fruit. And they don't last. And so verse 5, it talks about this divine courtroom. They won't stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. If you imagine a courtroom, the guilty who knows they're guilty, who chose the evil, comes before the judge, and the judge says guilty. The guilty people don't hang out in the courtroom. They're taken away. It's the innocent who stick around. And so it's this picture that the wicked will not last. The wicked don't bear fruit. This fruit tree is anchored, and every season it's good. But the wicked are like chaff, and just the slightest breeze will blow them away. And verse 6 is a summary that the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. On the journey of life, you get to go where you're going. You go where you're going. Now, what do we think of when we read the psalm? I said it was clear, but I don't think it's simple, and I would hold to that. But one idea that comes to mind is the idea of endless summer. Has anyone seen this movie? It's not just a poster, it's actually a movie. Has anyone seen it? It was from 1966, I think. I had a friend who was very interested in it when we were in high school, so I think that this movie was pretty formative on me as well. But it's these people, these surfers, who travel around the world in search of endless summer. And it was the idea that if you had enough money and enough time, you could always experience summer. And so they were looking for the perfect wave. They went to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Tahiti, Hawaii, Senegal, Nigeria, and Ghana just to stay in summer. So they'd go north to south and back north again. Endless summer. And I saw this movie maybe at a bad time of my life, and there's part of me that is still tempted. That idea is very appealing. Perfect wave, endless summer, travel around the world, oh. And part of me believes that if I love God, that he's going to do that for me. That God is going to give us all the time and all the money and whatever else we need to experience endless summer. Does anyone here believe that? I think we believe it more than we think we believe it. I definitely still struggle with it. Let me say it differently. When was the last time you were upset with God? What was the last big question you had for God? Hey, God, why did this? Why is that? And is that question connected to the idea of endless summer? Hey, God, everything is supposed to be perfect. Why isn't it perfect? See, sometimes the questions and the struggles we have are connected to this idea that everything's going to be perfect. And when it's not perfect, we come back to God and say, what's the deal? What's going on? I thought my leaves were never going to wither. I thought whatever I do would prosper. What's happening? See, the idea of endless summer is wonderful, but it does eventually end, even if you're making a documentary around the world about surfers. Maybe for you, it's that you're at work, you've been laid off, or hours are reduced, or you've been demoted or transferred. Maybe you have a relationship that has gone sour, or finances that have dried up, or you are watching someone go through something that you're powerless to change. And maybe your plans for the future, you're just watching them wither and die, and endless summer has come to an end. A few years ago, Emily and I were in a transition process. We were at a church, and our season at the church was coming to an end, and so we were going through the hiring process at another church, and if you ever want to become a pastor, it can easily take 6 to 8 months to go through the hiring process, and at any point in that process, it can either person can just kind of step out. And so we were probably 5 months into a 6 to 8 month process. Emily and I had both resigned our jobs, we sold our house, and we had begun to pack up our life here. And then about somewhere between the last and second last step of the whole process, the church let us know that they wouldn't be continuing any further. And it was a good decision. It was the right decision. But in that moment, we had begun to pack up our life, and all of a sudden, we had nowhere to go. And I have to be honest, I did not feel rooted. I felt uprooted. I didn't feel established. I had this feeling that we were in transition, that we were in limbo, and I had no idea where we were going next. And in that moment, if someone had come to me and said, hey, John, just remember, you're like a tree planted by streams of water, that would have sounded like empty words to me. Not the whole time. But there were points and times where I'm like, I don't know that I can see the goodness of God in this. I don't know how it's going to turn out well. I ended up here. That's pretty good. Yay! I'm happy to be here. But if we are expecting endless summer and something happens and then we come to Psalm chapter 1, it sounds like empty words. And we wonder, God, are you good? Does this mean anything? And if you're good and this is true and it's not for me, what's the deal? What's going on, God? And we can become cynical and we can become jaded. And maybe that's you here this morning. You hear this and you think, yeah. And it's just coming right off of you. And the hard part about cynicism and becoming jaded is that I know for me when I do struggle with that I see myself doing it and I have trouble caring. That when endless summer becomes empty words, I can become so cynical and so jaded and I wonder if God is even good. But I think that there's a way through. A way through endless summer, a way past empty words. And I think part of it is connected to how we understand the word blessing. See, sometimes when we think blessing, we think health and wealth and a good job and a good family and a good car and a good house. And all of our blessing is stuff out there. That if everything out there is good, then I am blessed and I am good. But what happens when the stuff out there isn't good? Well, if that's my blessing and it's gone, well, then I'm not blessed. And my blessing changes with the season. Good season, I'm blessed. Bad season, I'm not blessed. But there's something deeper, something better. See, blessing can include those things, but it can also just mean the word happy. Happy is the one who doesn't walk with the wicked. Happy is the one who meditates on God's law. So it's not just things are good, but that I am good. It can also mean experiencing the favor of God. And so the idea of blessing isn't anchored in things out there. It's anchored in God's rooting me, that I am experiencing his favor regardless of the season that I'm in. So it's not how good my coffee is or how nice the view is, hashtag blessed. It's how I'm doing in here, how deeply I'm rooted in God, hashtag rooted in the goodness and grace of God. It's different. I went to a conference a while ago in Portland. I took the train. And I was sitting on the train, and this fellow came in, and he'd been cycling, and I'm a cyclist, and so I'm like, hey, guy, but I wasn't wearing anything cycling, and he thought it was weird. And so he pulls out a loaf of bread to make lunch, which was fine, but then he takes out a jar of peanut butter. And I have a peanut allergy. And this guy starts to make, I think it was peanut butter banana sandwiches. And it's not going to kill me, but it's going to make for a very unpleasant journey. And so I changed my seat. And I experienced blessing. Simply because I didn't sit next to the guy making the peanut butter sandwich anymore. And sometimes the blessing of God, it doesn't come in health and wealth. It comes just in the fact that we aren't experiencing what we would have experienced had we stayed where we were. So take a moment and just think about who you hang out with this week. Not that we turn into a bunch of arrogant, self-righteous jerks, but are we okay to become like the people we hang out with? If we look at them and think, yeah, I want to become like you, well, how do we invest in those relationships? How do we grow them? How do they become deeper? And if we're like, I don't want to become like that, well, maybe we need to change our seat. Because blessed is the man with the peanut allergy who does not sit with the one who makes a peanut butter sandwich. But his delight is in a seat far enough away that he can't smell it. And sometimes the blessing just comes from avoiding what we would have experienced had we stayed. And there's a blessing that comes in living the way that God intended. And so how well do we know actually what God intends for our life? How well do we know God's word? Do we have time where it's not a chore, but there's actually joy in it? Is there a way to figure out how to glean something that can kind of get stuck in our head through the day? Whether it's a time in the morning or a podcast or an audio app, whatever it is there a way that we can get God's word stuck in our head so it fills our lives and overflows? See, there's a blessing in living life the way that God intended. If you think simply about being trustworthy, well, if you're trustworthy, you're trusted. Think about every relationship where trust is there. And if you imagine what would happen if that trust was gone, the blessing is that it's not. Sometimes there's a blessing that just comes in living life the way that God intended. But one thing that stood out to me more than almost anything else here in Psalm 1 was in verse 3, where it says that person is like a tree planted by streams of water. And what this means is that if this tree is getting planted, that there is a gardener. If you go to a greenhouse, I don't have a green thumb. There's a plant, I actually meant to get it. There's a plant that was put in my office when we kind of did the renovations, and that plant was dying, because I'm really bad with plants. But that plant got moved to Kevin's office, and now it's thriving, because he's better with plants than I am. And if you go to a greenhouse, there's a tag on a plant that says this kind of shade and this much water and this temperature and this soil and this, like all of this stuff, and I'm bad with that. But God is great at it. See, God knows us as his trees, as his plantings, and he knows this much sun and this much shade, and if I put you right here, you will have everything you need. Not hashtag blessing, but rooted in the goodness and grace of God. That as the gardener, God knows us, and he grounds us and he roots us that we can get through any season. See, God's not taking the tree away from life, he's getting it ready for it. He's not protecting the tree, he's preparing the tree. The tree will still go through the seasons. It will experience weather and animals and bugs and wind and all the things that trees go through. But 24/7, 365, spring, summer, fall and winter, drought and storms, hot and cold, that tree does not wither, and in its season it bears fruit. And see, I think the phrase here that really tripped me up, whatever they do prospers, I don't feel like I have experienced that. I have done something at least one time that did not prosper. Maybe we all have. But I think what helps me is, what does a tree do? It bears fruit. Okay, if I boil it down, that if I'm a tree, am I bearing fruit? And if that's a tree's job, well then I think that God has been pretty consistent at seeing fruit in my life. The prophet Jeremiah says something similar. In Jeremiah 17, it says, "Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They'll be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought, and it never fails to bear fruit." See, the tree isn't getting through it because it's such a great tree or because the weather is so good, but because God in his grace has planted and rooted this tree in a way that it can get through the seasons, not just get out of them. So what does this look like for us? Well, it's kind of like The Amazing Race. Has anyone watched The Amazing Race? Two. Okay, so The Amazing Race is this very popular TV show that's been running for 35 seasons now. And these teams of two, they travel around the world and they engage in different contests, and the goal is to be the last one there. But at the beginning of every day, the teams are there and they're handed an envelope and they rip it open and they take it out and they say, "Today you're in this city. You're going to be going here. Go over there for the rental car. You're going to do this. You're going to do this. You have $80 for this leg of the race." And see, in that moment, the producers have put things in place for the whole day, but what the team needs to get through all of those things is $80. And they know that it's enough for what is ahead. And this morning is communion. And if you imagine this morning that God hands you an envelope, and you rip it, and you pull it out, and it says, "Hey, good morning. Today, you're going to be going here. And you're going to be doing this. And this is what's going on, and you have been given enough for what you need in order to do this." See, communion is a reminder of that grace, that God sees us, he knows us, and in every season we can experience his faithfulness. You've been given enough for today. So in a moment, I'm going to invite up the band. I'm going to invite the band up now, but I'm going to invite the communion servers up in a moment. But communion is a reminder of when Jesus was crucified, he died, he was buried, but rose from the dead. And in doing that, he paid the price for our sin and defeated the power of death. And if you're here today and you don't know Jesus, we would love to introduce you. I can say, without reservation, that you desperately need Jesus. And the reason I can say that is because I look at myself and I know how desperately I need him. That every person here is a sinner, and whether we have received the grace of God yet or not, it is offered to us. And so if you have not yet met Jesus, we would love to introduce you. We'll have a prayer team that's available at the front here, also in the back in the prayer room there. If you would like to begin that journey of walking with Jesus, we invite you to join us, because we're on the exact same one. And maybe you already know Jesus, but you're in a season where it's hard to see God's faithfulness. Maybe you don't feel planted. You feel uprooted. And Psalm 1 just seems like empty words. But we talked a couple weeks ago about how God provided for the people of Israel in the desert by sending bread, by sending manna. And in John chapter 6, Jesus said that the manna was a picture of him. Daily bread for the journey through the desert. Maybe not enough for tomorrow, but enough for today. And when tomorrow's today, there'll be enough too. Just an encouragement too. No desert in the world and no season of the year lasts forever. There is another side. And so as you take the communion today, if that feels like you, just take a moment with Jesus to hear what he would have to say as you go through this desert wilderness. I also want to invite anyone who's felt the sting of the end of an endless summer. If you feel like promises were broken, the future you had imagined is gone, it can be easy to become cynical or jaded, that you stop hoping because you don't want to be disappointed anymore. And if that's the case, we would love to pray with you. And if you don't want to come for prayer, that's okay, but I would encourage you to say that to Jesus. He can handle what we have to say. If that's someone you know, you don't have to share details. You can come and we'd love to pray with you for them too. And maybe you're in a season of summer and everything is great. If that's the case, I would like to just read from Mark Buchanan what he says about seasons. He says, "I seek two things in every season. Christ's presence in season and out. To know that even the darkness cannot hide him and that by his light I see light. And I seek Christ's wisdom in season and out. To know how best to meet him, how best to make the most out of each season. In each moment." So this morning as you come, may this communion be a reminder to us that God's grace is enough for today. Not to take us out of the seasons, but to get them through.